Dozens and dozens of film noir from the 30s and 40s are now on DVD. Our critic at large, John Powers, has piles of them. But he says one stands out. It's the new digitally remastered Double Indemnity. John says it's the best example of the enduring power of film noir.
Although I like to take pride in my sunny nature, I must confess that no movie pulls me in like a film noir. And to judge from the explosion of noir DVDs, I'm not alone. More than half a century after its heyday, millions of us are still held rapt by its trademark sense of dislocation. All those mean streets, femme fatales, and ordinary Joes who get sucked into a whirlpool of doom. There may be no more perfectly tooled expression of the genre than Double Indemnity, the 1944 tale of murder just released in a fine new DVD. Not only is its story quintessential noir, so are its origins. From the beginning, film noir was a cultural hybrid, a cross between American pulp and a German film style brought to Hollywood by émigrés fleeing fascism. In Double Indemnity, this cultural exchange is writ large. Based on a potboiler by James M. Cain, the film was partly scripted by Raymond Chandler and directed by Austrian-born Billy Wilder. Fred McMurray stars as Walter Neff, an insurance agent who narrates the story to his friend Barton Keyes, that's Edward G. Robinson, a crack claims inspector at the same company. The tale is simple. Hoping to renew a client's policy, Neff meets Phyllis Dietrichson, a sneering man-trap played by perhaps the most worldly and independent actress in Hollywood history, Barbara Stanwyck. Phyllis isn't shy about flashing her legs or swapping tawdry banter, and Neff quickly falls under her spell. But he has some doubts, as in this scene, when he grasps that Phyllis wants to ensure her husband's life without him knowing it.
Goodbye, Mrs. Dietrichson.
What's the matter?
Look, baby, you can't get away with it. You want to knock him off, don't you?
That's a horrible thing to say.
What do you think I was, anyway? A guy that walks into a good-looking dame's front parlor and says, good afternoon, I sell accident insurance on husbands? You got one that's been around too long, one you'd like to turn into a little hard cash? Just give me a smile and I'll help you collect? Boy, what a dope you must think I am.
I think you're rotten.
I think you're swell, so long as I'm not your husband.
Get out of here.
You bet I'll get out of here, baby. I'll get out of here, but quick.
Neff may talk tough, but he's hooked. And within minutes, he's plotting Mr. Dietrichson's accidental murder. Naturally, the whole scheme goes terribly wrong. And this going wrong is precisely what draws us to Neff's story. For like nearly all film noir, it offers a pop version of classical tragedy, in which a modern hero, a regular guy who tries to escape the little narrowness of daily life, winds up unleashing the very fates that will destroy him. Now, it's easy to see how such a vision of life could have emerged in the 30s and 40s, when most ordinary Americans felt caught in the undertow of huge impersonal forces. The Great Depression, the threat of Nazism and communism, even the unsettling shift in gender roles as women poured into the workforce during World War II. In such a context, it was natural that many men felt overwhelmed, powerless, and like Walter Neff, yearned to escape. It was equally natural that noir should begin to fade during the 1950s boom years, when men felt more in control of their lives, and women were sent back to work in their spanking new kitchens. There were some great noir movies in that decade, of course, like Kiss Me Deadly and Vertigo. But noir soon fell into mannered decadence. Without the profound feelings of social paranoia that inspired it, the genre became little more than just a collection of stylistic tics. Yet even as time ran out on Hollywood's ability to make film noir, the great old noir films began to feel increasingly timeless. This is partly because the visual style of classic noir is so hauntingly beautiful, all that glorious black and white photography, all those thrillingly dark shadows. And it's partly because noir plays on our culture's continuing uneasy fascination with powerful women. Noir heroines tend to be smart, sexy, and lethal. And there's a lot of terrified misogyny in this. The term black widow comes to mind. But there's also something thrilling about seeing such forceful women in a movie era when Meryl Streep's Miranda Priestly in The Devil Wears Prada is the year's only female role to approach the potent vividness of Stanwyck's Phyllis Dietrichson. But the big reason for its enduring power is this. Unlike westerns, costume dramas, or romantic comedies, the great noir films put us in touch with the power of darkness, be it the death-entranced corners of our psyche or the shadowy flip side of our American obsession with success. Noir comes steeped in failure and ruin, and it does so without making these things dreary. It invests its small-time heroes and heroines with a sense of awful grandeur. After all, in Double Indemnity, Walter Neff doesn't merely ruin his life for a woman. He turns his ruination into a larger-than-life story that still grips us 60 years later.
John Powers is film critic for Vogue.